I'm still recording, so if you want to share this, I'm actually I went to see the Blake painting at the Brooklyn Museum.
We talked about doing that.
Much in the same way as Dollarhide did. I simply emailed them. I said I was interested in seeing this painting. I love the show Hannibal. Like, we loved, and they were like, yeah, sure, we'll show it to you. So the curator took us back. They showed us the painting. We did not eat it.
Okay, good morning. This is a second helping of Hannibal. I am Beth.
And I'm your co-host, Matt. And today we are thrilled to have a guest host with us. She's an editor and culture critic who writes with great care and insight about fandoms and the relationship between fans and creators. And we know her also for the boundless energy and love she brings to the Hannibal community. So please welcome Rotem Rusak.
Hello. I'm very glad to be here on, really, I think, my first Hannibal podcast. And if I've been on a Hannibal podcast before and I've forgotten, I'm very sorry. But I think I've only done Marvel so far. So, surprisingly enough.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're really happy to have you. And to jump into today's discussion. First of all, before we really get started, Matthew's given you a little introduction, but can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do? And then after that, how it is you came to watch Hannibal? Did you watch it in real time? How you watched it?
Sure. So everyone can call me Ro if you'd like. I generally go by Ro these days. Yeah, I am a news editor for Nerdist right now, which has basically been like a dream job for me. I've kind of been circling entertainment work for a long time, but I've done kind of marketing and social media and other avenues. But all of that, with the help of Hannibal, I would say, finally kind of got me to this place where kind of my profession and my passion have come together. And I got to write and edit and think about things that I love every day. So that's been really wonderful. As far as Hannibal goes, I started watching when 10 episodes had aired. Actually, only 12 of the episodes aired live that year because they removed OOF for like news purposes. There'd been something in the news they didn't want to overlap with. So although OOF should have been in the mix, there were only 10 that I kind of knew of in the zeitgeist. And actually, when I started watching, I thought there were only 10. So I thought I was watching the completed season when I started, but surprise, there were still two more to go. It had kind of been on my Tumblr dash for a long time. I saw it go by. I'd previously been in the Supernatural fandom, but I kind of had lapsed from that. I wasn't necessarily looking for like a new fandom, but when you see something go by so many times and there's Maz and there's Hugh and everybody was talking about it at the time, at least in my circles. So I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And I actually watched 10 episodes. I watched it for 10 episodes without being really sure if I was like totally in for it. It was for some reason, obviously maybe for just a Hannibal reason, very different than what I had imagined it to be. I don't know what I had like imagined it to be, but like Hannibal wasn't like it exactly like Will wasn't like very nice, and Hannibal was Hannibal, and I don't know. But I kept watching, and then I watched those 10 episodes, and then episode 11, it's really episode 12, but that one episode had been pulled, aired, and Will was like, you made me chicken soup? And I was like, oh my God, they're in love! And then it all came together for me there when I realized that, in fact, the whole show was about Will and Hannibal and their relationship, and whether or not Hannibal was as in love as I imagined him to be at that moment where I was like, oh my God, he made him chicken soup, they're in love. At that moment of just like feeling, it was definitely where the story was going. So then I watched it, I was hooked, then episode 12 came around, the finale, 13 really, Savareau, and I remember very keenly because there was some basketball game on, and I was in college at the time, but I just graduated, I believe, so I was like kind of still around for the summer. I'm just trying to find a TV to watch. Everybody was watching this basketball game and it was like 10 minutes in and I was like, I have to watch Hannibal. but I finally found a TV that was empty and I was throwing pillows at the couch. It was amazing. And then of course I was hooked.
It's interesting because, well, two things. Matthew and I have, when we started this podcast, I think one of the first things we spoke about in the first episode was the fact that we both had a similar reaction that we didn't really know through the first several episodes whether this was, you know, for like we didn't, I didn't initially fall in love with the show the way I do with some shows. And Matthew had the same reaction. And we've said that, at least for me, I think that was just because I went in with very different expectations of what this show. I went in, first of all, with skepticism about whether a network show could do anything interesting with this source material. Mm-hmm. And I think we both felt this way. We sort of went in with an expectation that, like the source material and the adaptations, even though they deal with a lot of bizarre subject matter, it was going to be grounded in sort of real world convention. Like,
Yes.
I mean, the source material and the adaptations do explore a lot of nuanced ideas, but they are grounded in our universe. And I think if you're expecting a show to be grounded in our universe, Hannibal is not that show. And so things feel very discordant. And, you know, if you're expecting reality-based things to be happening, it's not for you. And then you sort of shift gears in your mind and say, this is a different universe. And things are operating the way they operate because we are in a different universe. And there's a lot of dream logic at work here. And then you can kind of just accept that zeitgeist of the show. Right. And it just becomes such a rich viewing experience.
Exactly.
The other thing is when you talk about you made me chicken soup. If anyone's interested in listening to our podcast on that episode, I believe we spent perhaps close to an hour discussing just that line.
That one line.
The nuances of that line and all the sort of emotion. Yes. And
actually, it's fascinating because I'm pretty sure that soup is designed to make his fever worse. I can't swear to it, but I think the ingredients in it actually are designed to hurt, not help Will. So it's not sweet at all, but it has a very has a domesticity to it that kind of underlies the relationship. Even as murdery as it is, there's this vision of a family, but it's its own thing. And I completely agree on what you say about the world of the show. I feel like that's definitely one of the hardest things to make people understand, is that it looks like reality, but it's just off reality. It's definitely its own magical reality. Even in the parts that feel like reality, we're inhabiting a magical world where magic can happen, even in the more mundane scenes of the FBI and the victims, and, you know, things like the priest winking at Abigail, or the murderer who was making the angels, like, being able to speak to Will, or just being able to know they were evil. Like, there's all these kind of slightly supernatural elements that seep in and make it really wonderful.
No, I agree. That helps you. A few episodes in, that helps you understand that you're in this world, because the murders of the week structure of the early episodes, the murders are so fanciful and so unlikely, but beautiful to look at. And also, the murderers are not always portrayed, especially early on, as villainous. They're compelled to do what they're doing. But the show is careful to be empathetic to them and help us understand why they got to the place that they got to. Sometimes they're physically ill. And so they're not cast as black and white villains at all early on. And I think that really a few episodes in, that really helps ease you into what the whole attitude of the show is going to be and the whole emotional content of it's going to be.
Yes. And also the fact that the show is not, doesn't bind itself to the rules of time and space in our world. I mean, it's just, you do come to realize that, you know, when you go into the show, you're thinking, if this was a show that was reality based and required you to suspend disbelief, you couldn't do it. So you have to be someplace, you have to accept that you're someplace else. You're in partly through a looking glass with this show, and it's very beautiful, the place you're in.
I think it's really interesting that you just said that if you look at the ingredients in the chicken soup, it would actually make Will's condition worse.
I think I read that.
Because, well, that makes total sense. And it also makes total sense for the show. Hurting someone is loving someone, and vice versa. There's with Hannibal and with Will, there's one of the things that it takes three seasons to get you to understand and feel is that those two things are really inseparable, and that in this relationship and the way that these two feel about relationships and about love is that the absolute value of hurting someone and the absolute value of loving someone are the same, and that's what's important. And so Hannibal may well have been hurting him with the chicken soup, but it's ultimately a gesture of love to hurt him if that harm is going to get him to the place of fulfilling his...
Right, his greater form. Yeah, I mean, I think for Hannibal, I think Hannibal's whole project, regardless of like who he touches or interacts with, is to bring them to their highest forms in a sense. And for some people, that means just killing them and making them into beautiful dinner. But for Will, it's obviously a more complicated project. Hannibal doesn't really want to kill Will, but he's curious how far Will can go. So in deference of that lofty aim, he feels anything he does to push Will down this path where he sees the greatest possible potential for Will is the right thing to do. And that obviously for Hannibal includes many things. And we see that waver. And sometimes he is just like, oh, I should kill Will. I do think that's really interesting. I do think in kind of early season one, Hannibal is still in a place where he does not fully like comprehend what he feels about Will. And there is an element of just still playing around in a sense. I think he has like this tacit awareness that Will is interesting to him. I think he does come to a conclusion that maybe he does want Will's friendship on the Tobias Budge episode. But I think it's still early days for Hannibal in terms of like maybe attachment to Will. I actually think we see that attachment for him when he's kind of gotten what he wants. He has Will exactly where he knows he can always find him, behind bars or, you know, glass walls or whatever it is. But then he misses him. And that, I think, realization that actually this isn't maybe what he wanted. Not that Hannibal's like, oh, I made a mistake, but like, he's like, oh, well, maybe like, there's further to go, and that he doesn't want Will like trapped in a sense. I think that takes longer into season two and maybe well into season three as well.
Yeah. And that idea of Hannibal not thinking I made a mistake is you do realize, or you realize that he realizes he'd like to turn the clock back, because he comes increasingly obsessed with the idea of putting the teacup back together. And maybe that is his way of thinking about whether he made a mistake or not, you know, because he does, you know, as you're saying this, I'm realizing that that may actually be an increasing obsession for him. He may realize that in this path that he initially chose, he'd really actually like to rewind and change it a little bit, even if Hannibal doesn't feel regret in the way that a regular person feels regret. He actually feels so powerful that his mental positioning is, let me figure out how to turn back time, like Superman, right?
It has to be so lofty, because he can't just say, like, I miss Will, I messed this up. But I do think that is very interesting, because I think Hannibal would like to maybe tell himself he doesn't feel regret, and maybe he doesn't feel traditional regret, and maybe he feels regret and also triumph, you know, those like different streams of thought he's always following. Because, you know, looking at that empty chair when Will isn't there, you know, he misses him, like something mm-hmm. has gone awry, and it is Hannibal's doing, whether he assigns himself that blame or can like be like, I did this, so I now have to suffer this consequence. That's what, like, I mean, probably Hannibal doesn't think like that, but that's kind of where we see him end up, when he's like several times looking at that empty chair and being like, something has gone wrong here for Hannibal.
And this is something that Beth observed very early on, that as I'm hearing you talk about this, is making me think more about Hannibal feeling surprised that he actually is feeling these quote unquote ordinary emotions about Will. Because, you know, when Hannibal first walks in and sees Will talking about, you know, sees Will's lecture, he gets this look on his face like, wait, could this be true? Could there be another person in the world who understands this in the way that I understand it? And there are increasing moments in season one where Hannibal is having those first flushes of fascination and just plain old human love. Like, wait a minute, am I actually liking this person more than I liked them yesterday? Is this really happening? And that, you know, so that takes him by surprise. And like, I think it's very, I don't think anyone would argue that falling in love is wonderful, and it's also difficult because yes. you are surprised by how overwhelmed you feel every step of the way. And I don't know, Beth, am I?
Yeah. No, I think it's really true that Hannibal does keep having this experience, and whether it's always consciously acknowledged, there's points when I think it's consciously acknowledged and points where it isn't. But I think he is having this experience that you have when you're falling in love with someone, where you're just saying, oh, I can't really feel more feelings than I'm feeling right now for this person. And then something happens and you're like, oh my God, I'm capable of loving this person even more. And that just sort of keeps progressing with Hannibal and Will. I do think this is why one of the reasons we all love that you made me chicken soup line, is because Hannibal pauses, because I think he's saying, oh yeah, I did. And I did because of these feelings that are going on in me that I really haven't ever felt before. I felt something akin to this with Misha, and I thought that was the end of that. And this is with an adult, a complex adult. So it's very different in that way, but emotionally similar. So anyway, yeah, he does his I think his own feelings and his own connection to Will keep surprising him, and it's because Will is not entirely predictable to him, and there's always more there. There's always more in the Will to draw from.
I mean, I think Hannibal kind of falls in aesthetic love a lot, and he's very passionate about music and art, and even in a sense, like the people he cooks, he's like, I'm making you better. Isn't this wonderful? Like, he sees them as pigs, but with his own work and, you know, art and music and other talented individuals and things like that, he's always kind of like falling in love in a sense. But I think with Will, it's just like this knowledge of being understood. I do think it's interesting that Will can understand kind of anybody, and Hannibal is like one of those people, and yet it's so, I don't know, that just struck me as funny, because it's not like he could understand just Hannibal as his soulmate. Will is really capable of understanding anybody, and also he understands Hannibal, but Hannibal sees it as such a like wonder.
Yes, Will can understand anybody, but not anybody or nobody else can understand Hannibal. So it is very unique.
Right.
And no one understands Will but Hannibal. So they have the same experience with each other. I mean, Hannibal has a different way of understanding people. he has an understanding of what motivates people and how people can be manipulated. And it's a very intellectual understanding, as opposed to Will's, which is an emotional, empathetic understanding, mm-hmm. which is actually why you brought this up when we talked the other day. They are, in fact, identically different.
Yeah.
So they get kind of to the same place, but through a different, through different gifts or burdens, as Will might see it.
Yes.
So, Ro, when we were talking the other day, just prepping a little bit for this conversation, you had volunteered that your favorite episode is Digestivo. And something that we do like to talk about with people is, other than Mizumono and Wrath of the Lamb, what episode do you think exemplifies Hannibal the best? And Beth and I both went back and rewatched Digestivo. And in fact, this morning, right before we talked, which has left us, I think, both a little verklempt, but as we're talking about Hannibal learning to understand how he feels about Will, it's making me think about the Chio-Hannibal relationship a little mm-hmm. bit. And I wanted to ask you both what you felt about this, because when I was rewatching it, I was noticing that when Hannibal is having his final conversation with Chio, right, he's releasing her, or she is being released from this thing that they've been in. And I was watching it, and I just happened to have to pause right before the final conversation with Will. And I just noticed that Hannibal looks sad while he's talking to Chio, almost as if he's warming up for his goodbye or for the conversation with Will. Like it's almost this goodbye of a relationship that has actually been really important to him is warm up for this other thing that might or might not be about to happen. And I think Beth and I have been a little, unforgiving is the wrong word, but not super excited always about Chio, because there's some gaps between, I think, her performance and some of the other performances in the show. But
and also, by the way, how she's used, because I like to refer to her as Chio Ex Machina, because she does get sort of inserted to make something happen cataclysmically, to solve a problem or, you know, to
I think obviously, like, we didn't have as much time with Chio as maybe we could have going forward. But I think that she kind of, to me, she has like a very, like an understood spot in a sense, because Hannibal talks a lot about these teacups, and I think indeed we see him collect several teacups. I think Misha was in a sense a teacup that has been broken. Abigail is a teacup that has been broken. And Chio, I think, kind of falls in that same role of this like sister, protege, person that Hannibal seeks for some reason, this person he can mentor. And maybe in a sense he thought Will could be that person, but he found to be his equal instead. So Chio is more of this like person to father in a sense, to be an older brother to maybe. That's kind of how I read their relationship. And in a way, this relationship with Chio somehow went right. She's not mad at him. She reciprocates affection for him. In a sense, I think it's like she is just a person on Hannibal's team in a way. And that's something maybe Hannibal doesn't like, we don't see him have, but like that does add like an interest to me. Like, should we see them go further? Obviously, Hannibal may turn on anyone at any point for whatever reasons he sees fit. But that's kind of where I see Chio falling into the equation. She had this reckoning, in a sense. Hannibal hurt her in his way, but she has come to see that as the positive Hannibal thinks it is, that she is killed, that she's evolved, that she has like become her own person now, that she kind of sees Hannibal as this wild animal, but when you shouldn't cage. So I don't know where her future would go, but I kind of I personally enjoy that relationship and would enjoy a kind of like Will Hannibal Chio interaction in the future. So that's just my read on Chio.
Well, that's why I was starting to just reconsider it as I was rewatching it and noticing how wistful Hannibal seems to feel about letting her go. And in talking moments ago about how Hannibal is sort of, you know, leveling up his love for Will to his surprise, that did he think Chio was as close as he was ever going to get to someone? Hmm. And is he surprised, as you're saying, by the fact that she has evolved into her own person and he's comfortable letting her go? He's not going to try to put her back in Lithuania to guard another person. He doesn't think she should be caged anymore in the way that she was talking about with Bedelia. And does letting her go moments before he's about to be broken up with by Will, or temporarily broken up with by Will, is he getting his first taste of, you know what, not being completely in control of another person's fate has a certain emotional satisfaction that I had never anticipated? And is the weight of that kind of hitting him in that moment as he sees Chio go? I wonder in a way if Chio is sort of warm up for Will, you know, just sort of in general in Hannibal's life, and even in this moment, is he being battered by emotions that he doesn't expect? Because he's really softened up when Will breaks up with him. He is not happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a sense he lets Chio go because he kind of envisions whatever happens next. Like, he doesn't need her there to protect him, or like she just maybe like either like he runs away with Will, or he goes to jail. I don't know if he's thinking about that in that moment, but I think he's kind of like, it's me and Will from here. In a sense, he's like, you don't have to like watch me, because she was kind of following him, watching him and this whole Mason debacle at the house. But I don't know. I think Hannibal, like, although maybe he's at points surprised by the emotions, he kind of treasures them in a way. He's like, oh, I must be feeling sad now. How glorious for me. It's me feeling it. So it must be wonderful. I don't know about Chio being, I don't know. I think he just has this habit of looking for this teacup in his life. And he sort of had found Chio to be another one of these people who he had this mysterious connection with. And in a sense, I think he's trying to put together the teacup again, Misha being that teacup, with Chio. But again, left her in this state of like this challenge where she had this, you know, this task that she sort of kept, like, didn't complete. So she was stayed in status for so long. I think there's a beautiful kind of wistfulness. I think he's coming to terms with this idea that she's kind of on his team. He likes who she's become. He doesn't need to micromanage her in a sense. And it's hard to know what that means for Hannibal, if that means he like has discovered a new emotion, or if he's just like, well, okay, like this is kind of done for the moment. Maybe we'll pick it up later, you know. Just because Will is so looming so large at the moment that he's like, Will is the focus, kind of.
Right.
Can you talk more generally, let's set Chio aside for the moment, about why this episode is such a favorite for you?
Yeah, for me, Dolce, the episode that immediately precedes this, is like a really hard one, because I had hoped, after kind of Will chasing Hannibal and Hannibal missing Will, and finally a reunion that we could set aside the like let's murder each other of it all. But we had one last let's murder each other of it all in us. But when Hannibal, like, you know, tried to saw Will's head open, that was very personally disappointing to me because I hoped he could understand that what he did not want was a world without Will, even if he consumed him. I think it's been said in interviews that while Hannibal was intent on going through with it, he was, in a sense, pleased to be interrupted by Mason's goons, which you know, I can roll with that. But then after Dolce was such a, you know, a punch in the gut, then DiGiustivo came and kind of healed all wounds, in a sense. I really felt like Hannibal shone in his decision-making skills in DiGiustivo in a way Hannibal does not, and perhaps has not since, like, shined in that regard. It just maybe happened that Hannibal's vision of the right thing and my vision of the right thing aligned. So that was good. But I really felt he came through in this episode, although he is still, like, out of shape about Alana, like, you know, saying that, like, he told her to be blind or be brave, and she was brave, and he's never forgiving her for that. I'm like, maybe you could get over that one. But but he does, in a sense, help Alana and Margot. He saves Will. He takes him home. He's kind to Chio, in a sense. So it was like a taste of, like, Hannibal, should he put all his energy into being, like, a brave and noble soul, in a sense. Not that we would ever want that for Hannibal, but it was nice to have for an episode, for me, a person who loves Hannibal and wants him to make the right decision sometimes.
It's funny listening to you describe the rhythm of Dolce and DiGiustivo and Hannibal's kind of journey. It actually reminds me a little bit of the rhythms of the therapeutic process, right? Mm-hmm. Where in therapy, you may be confronted with an idea that you don't want to deal with. And what do? You kick back against it really hard. And only later, the next session or whatever, when it starts to settle in, do you say, you know what, you were right. And your therapist will say, yeah, people kick back against something they don't want to deal with. But, like, yeah, now you can process it. Now that you got that initial burst of hostility toward the idea out of the way, you can start to process it. And I feel like the DiGiustivo, the Dolce DiGiustivo rhythm sort of feels like that a little bit, because Hannibal in Dolce has shaken him up. He's gotten his ass kicked. Bedelia's left him. You know, like, right, and sort of taking control of him. Remember, she takes his notebook away. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really in a position of vulnerability or semi-vulnerability for the first time in a while, and things may not be going exactly the way he wants them to go. He mm-hmm. says he wanted to stick around in Italy and show Will around, right? Things are not quite going the way he wants them to go. Mm-hmm. And Dolce and his desire to eat Will in front of Jack may be that therapeutic moment of kicking back and saying, fuck you, I am going to reassert myself here. I'm going to eat Will's head. I'm going to kill Jack. God. I'm going to do it in front of you, right? And then there's a forced break and he has some time to think about it. And what then the next time we see him, what's he doing? He's settled down. He's letting Chio go. Will is totally vulnerable physically in that final scene of Dolce, right? Where he's talking to Will. He could just walk over to him and snap his neck right there.
In DiGiustivo.
He's bedridden. You know, Will couldn't fight back. And what does Hannibal do? He takes Will's anger and says, okay, Will deserves to feel this way. Now I am not going to completely accept the breakup. I'm going to get myself caught so Will always knows where I am. But he's approaching the relationship with way less aggression than he was a few days before. And I think maybe that mirrors just the psychological process of learning a hard thing about yourself and learning to incorporate it into your subsequent thinking.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because obviously Will and Hannibal, they've gone through all this trauma. Hannibal really in Mizumono believed they were on the same team and then found Will to be lying. And that was like a pain he experienced like never before. And then they separated and Hannibal dealt these blows to Will and they were kind of looking for each other and didn't know what would happen when they saw each other. And then they saw each other and they were kind of at odds again. But DiGiustivo presents this like convenient, like for Hannibal, in a sense, opportunity to be on the same team. They're both on the same team with Mason. Mason is their villain and they have a shared like enmity for Mason, and they are thus like on the same side, which like brings them together in a sense, which I think pleases Hannibal. And maybe gets him out of that like antagonistic mind state he was in Dolce.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, look, they have one of the most romantic moments ever in Dolce, right? Yes. In the Uffizi. Yes. It's incredibly beautiful and layered and nuanced. And again, like, I'm not going to open that can of worms because I can just talk about that forever. And it gives me feelings that I don't know what to do with for the rest of the day. But they are kind of romantically vulnerable to each other in Dolce in a way that they both are kicking back against. They're both yes. reacting against. And yes, yes, in DiGiustivo, they have a place to turn their aggression outward, not against each other.
Exactly.
And they are very, very connected in their thinking, feeling, behavior all throughout DiGiustivo. I mean, the moment when Will bites Cordell's face off and he just turns and gives that little look to Hannibal to see, like, what do you think? What do you think? And yes. Hannibal's just beaming at him. And they also are both therapeutically being, in the bizarro world, therapeutically honest as well as manipulative with both with Will with Alana and Hannibal with Margot to achieve yes. the exact same end.
Yes.
They are not in the same room. They haven't discussed this. It's not a plan. They're just both completely on the same wavelength in understanding what has to happen and what is the vehicle to make that happen and how they create that.
And despite everything, Will really like gives the old guilt trip on Alana to save Hannibal in a sense. He's like, oh, you worked with Mason? Like, what were you thinking? Kind of like, I'm like, that's very rich for Will to be like, oh, like, can't believe you put us in this situation. Like, after everything. And then of course Hannibal too is like, obviously he would like to save Will, and though Alana thinks she needs to make this bargain, indeed I don't think she does, because Hannibal will save Will if she releases him, but he also just stopped by to help Alana and Margot achieve a son, and that's definitely maybe not altruistic, but it happens. So so like in a sense, our whole team, everybody we kind of like is working together in this episode, which although can't happen all the time in Hannibal, it's like you know, it's a popular element and idea in like fix and stuff that like everybody's getting along, everybody's working together, like, you know, Alana and Margot are like Will's BFFs, they're like gossiping about Hannibal and alternate universes and things like that. So it's like, it's nice to have that moment of satisfaction on screen to see like Alana's freeing Hannibal and Hannibal saving Will and Hannibal giving Margot and Alana what they need to have their child. And then like Hannibal talking to Chio is like mentally and complimentary and whatever. And so it just is like a warm, to me, it feels like a warm episode in a sense.
Yeah. They also, there's just a lot of beauty and a lot of crazy all packed into this episode.
Yes. It's really amazing.
Just forget how much of it is in here. You have, I mean, the verger baby, surrogate, and with the little pig mobile hanging in the room, and, you know, the eel murder, which, of course, I do want to just say, I don't think Hannibal, of course, is actually altruistic in what he does. He does help Margot and Alana, but he also turns them into killers. Like, he achieves his goal of actually making both of them kill. Is the one. Also, Will is also responsible for that with Alana as well. But there's just so much.
I mean, it's warm for Hannibal, right?
Yes.
Warm for Hannibal means pig babies and a couple murders.
Yes.
The whole gang is doing it together. So.
Yeah, cattle prods to the prostate and whatever, bees are alive. I mean, whatever. And you just also have beautiful images. I mean, Hannibal carrying Will as his sort of broken bride through the snow is just one of the most beautiful, romantic, traditional, out of horror traditions things you could possibly see.
And I think when they kind of wake up, like when Will wakes up and he's like vulnerable and like awakening, and Hannibal's sitting there watching over him, in a sense, it's a very intimate portrait of like waking up together, even though ostensibly they have not slept together. We don't see it, so I mean, who could say for sure? No, I'm just kidding. But in a sense, there's just this like intimacy of like awakening and this mourning together, and Hannibal's just watching him and he's like coming to life, and although of course Will is he's so done at that point, it's like done in this vulnerable way. He's opening himself up to Hannibal, and he's like, at this moment, this is my absolute truth and I'm telling it to you. Like, and Hannibal too is giving very vulnerably of himself, like kind of trying in different ways. It's like, I've discovered you in my memory palace. Like, can't the teacup come together, even like in the rooms of our mind?
Yeah.
Like, can't we turn back time and just be together, in a sense? And Willis is like, no. But I mean, there's obviously, to get to a place where you're breaking up so emotionally, like that implies, you know, like something about the whole relationship that you can kind of see emerge at that moment. Of course, Hannibal cannot leave Will enough alone and do what Will asks, which would be the true altruistic act, but I don't want him to. So in a sense, that goes right for me as well. So I'm like, okay. Other people feel angrier that Hannibal kind of robs Will of his moment, kind of like, leave me. And for a moment, he thinks he did leave him. He's like, Jack, he's gone. But Hannibal's like, no, you thought, surprise, you thought you'd seen the last of me, kind of meme moment. But but I'm not mad at it. So.
The thing is, he wouldn't be who he is if he did just disappear. And it wouldn't really make sense. He loves Will, but he's not self-sacrificing.
No.
And he has to see his projects through to the end. I mean, in this episode, he had this I told you so moment with Margot, where he says, you see, I told you you were going to have to kill Mason, and you're going to.
Oh,
and
that's Alana another walks thing, in, right? He's very gallant in a sense when he's like, but you can say I did it, though.
Yeah, that's fine.
You have to do it, but you can say I did it. And like, that's my gift to you, kind of, for helping me. I do think it's interesting. I think that Margot does like Hannibal. In a sense, I think there's like this like chemistry between them. He's kind of messed with her life in a sense. But like when she comes to talk to him, there's kind of a familiarity. I think that would be also an interesting relationship to explore in a possible future. Of course, he's like coming after her wife now, but we're like, Hannibal, can we just drop that? Like, can we just like, like, what was Alana gonna do? She was brave. You should admire that. Like, but of course, Hannibal's still stubbornly being like, no, I gotta kill her.
He's gotta see that through.
Mm-hmm. Hannibal wants Will. Hannibal's idea of Will's becoming is always very interesting to me, because I feel like he wants Will to become but as Will. He doesn't want Will to lose the essence of Will. He just wants Will to be a fully integrated individual and not deny parts of himself. I kind of think as a viewer, Hannibal turning himself in so that he can both be, so he can remain in Will's thoughts and Will's mind, both as a punishment and as a need. Is Hannibal being the essence of Hannibal? You know, like if Hannibal had left and let Will just be entirely free of him, that wouldn't be who he is. And we don't want him to not be who he is.
Exactly.
So there's a thing about becoming or growing or evolving, which Hannibal, of course, does. He does evolve.
Yep.
But not to the point where you're not, where you deny your essence. That would be
no, never.
A weird backward step for Hannibal to say, I'm a self-sacrificing individual. He's not. He never would be and he shouldn't be.
No, I do think it's interesting that he's making a calculated sacrifice here. Like he's sacrificing parts. But it's interesting because those things that he thought were so crucial to him, like the fancy dinners and the clothes and the ability to murder even, perhaps, he's setting those aside. Maybe he doesn't see it as like an eternal sacrifice, but for the moment, he's like, this trumps all of those things that once were the only things to me. So.
Yes, absolutely.
We love that.
Boy, listening to this it's really, and I'm sorry to come back to this, it's really giving me the desire to give Chio a chance. All I am saying is give Chio a chance.
Yes.
That
give Chio a chance.
That, well, Ro, before when you were characterizing, and I hadn't really thought about this, the way they all work together, it's almost like this Avengers Assemble kind of moment
where exactly.
they're all going to make this happen. And Hannibal's almost like it's Hulk smash, right? They let him out. He has that moment where he just like grows in stature and becomes a dead-eyed monster. And it's a great moment.
But it's very interesting because it's like not the way Hannibal really kills in a sense, to just kind of smash through people, to get blood all over him, to just like do it ruthlessly, but he's doing it for Will. It's like very efficient. It's very brutal, but it's like he's not killing as he usually kills for his own kind of divinity and beauty and like the sort of like God he likes to play when he feels he like brings people to their higher forms. Instead, it's like this rage that he's unleashing because he would like to save Will. So, yeah.
And there's a Chio moment there that I'm rethinking now based on this conversation we're having, because there is a moment where Hannibal, when he's carrying Will out, there's two.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm sorry. I will try to make this the last time in this conversation.
No,
I'm rethinking,
I like
Chio. But there is this moment in post-Avengers Assemble where Hannibal, I think he's carrying Will out. There's two of Mason's henchmen behind Hannibal. And Chio, with the sniper rifle, shoots them both.
Yes.
And Hannibal kind of like looks up and is like, wink, thanks,
exactly.
Chio. Now, Hannibal did not need her to do that, right? It's nice that she helps out, but he's in beast mode and he is he probably hears them behind him. If they were to pull out guns and try to shoot him, he would get out of it and kill them both.
Sure.
I think he almost either allows Chio to do it so he can thank her, but also allows Chio to do it so that she can have that level of agency, which at this moment, through all this stuff, he is working his way toward releasing her, right? So he's actually giving her a moment of growth and power and agency to say, yeah, Chio, I needed you at this moment, and I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate you being out of the cage. I appreciate you being out of Lithuania. And I almost feel like that's a step on his way to his process of letting her go, which he's going to do in a couple of more scenes. What do you think of my Chio revelation.
Right. I think it's really interesting. I think that, yes, he probably could take those goons on, right? But like, he's having a moment. He's carrying Will. It's cinematic. He saved him. He doesn't really want to put Will down in the snow and like kill a couple goons, pick him up again. That's not like the romantic, right. Like, so in a way, I think what Hannibal sees here, what we see, and is, of course, it's part of the fairy tale or whatever, is that like it's okay, maybe in a sense, or it's good to have a team. Like, this doesn't suck for him to be like, oh well, I got Chio in the tree, and like she sees me, and I think she's like between gold and silver, whatever that the quote is. And that's okay. Like, that's something I can embrace in this moment, which mm-hmm. I think for Hannibal is also an interesting step for Hannibal, who's usually like, I'll do it my way and I'll do it alone. You know, he doesn't really want to rely or allow, you know, unless he's manipulating somebody into helping him. Like, he's like, okay, well, Chio can be in the tree. She's part of the team. Like, she can help mm-hmm. me carry Will dramatically to safety. And like, you know, like this is what Hannibal's absorbed in this moment. So mm-hmm. yeah. So I think it's just more of that feeling of like connection.
It's also very notable that Bedelia's not here, because she could never be a member of a team like this, right? She could ever participate in this kind of group activity. She just doesn't seem built for it.
It's interesting. And I think Bedelia suffers a chronic, and Will much the same. They have this intense animosity in a sense. Like, I don't think she would maybe even care to really save Will to be part of this effort, which is really ultimately about, you know, it's about many things. So saving Will is kind of the centerpiece of the whole like congregation. And I think just, I'm not sure she would have any interest in that, or maybe even any interest in the way in what Hannibal, you know, transforms into when he is with Will versus, you know, the way he is alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bedelia certainly wouldn't be participating in any life-saving of Will measures. In fact, she really prods Hannibal, when he's a little bit out of control, into doing the brain eating or attempting the brain eating. And I certainly think we can say that, well, my feeling is, Will, if you look at the stinger of Wrath of the Lamb and you want to, and you choose to believe Will is there,
mm-hmm.
Will is very, very happy to have Hannibal take something from Bedelia. He's wanted that for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So the animosity between the two of them as Hannibal's brides is not something that gives rise to teamwork, and yes, it is one of the most charming, enjoyable, snipey.
It is interesting though, because despite all of that, it is Bedelia who, I mean, who can say what Bedelia's ultimate aims are? But when she tells Will that she believes him, she does kind of give him that assurance that he's not wrong. Kind of helps motivate him to continue on this, like, assailing of Hannibal. So, in a sense, she does save him in some way in that scene.
There's no question mm-hmm. about that. That scene is very powerful. Her saying that to him is salvation for him at that point. Mm-hmm. He may well have gone under if she hadn't thrown him that lifeline. But I also think it is a point prior to relationships with Hannibal
put them
in that kind of opposition.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And with apologies, I'm going to say one more Chio thing, which I'm remembering something Bedelia says to Chio, where she says mm-hmm. something to the effect of, I thought Will Graham was Hannibal's biggest mistake, but actually I wonder if it isn't you.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting, because Chio is all in for Hannibal. In a way, even Will is not really all in for Hannibal. But I also do really like that juxtaposition. I feel like it's really well done. And obviously, like, just as with Hannibal, it's like in a scene, and it could be really like you could dive into it and have whole episodes about it. But that Chio is so you know, she's so kind of like, she's like in a military coat and it's very square and rigid and, you know, gender fluid in a sense. She's not like really masculine or feminine, which is kind of like present. And Bedelia is like in like this flush of femininity in that scene. And this like vivacious kind of like sensual creature. And I think that is like between them, a very interesting juxtaposition. So I'm here to ship it is what I'm saying.
I will say, speaking of Chio's coat, this is just a shallow aside.
Yes, we love it.
The women's coat game in Digestivo is on point.
For everyone.
I mean, Chio's got the little military coat with the brass buttons. It's gorgeous. Margo's got the fur. It's fantastic. And Alana's got that gorgeous print number. I mean, the coats are top notch. Coach,
everybody dressed for dinner, as it were.
Yeah. Everyone has good coats in the show, I have to say. And I mean, by necessity, they always have to be wearing coats because of where they were filming. But the Freddie has gorgeous coats. I don't know. Do we see Bedelia wearing? Oh, of course. Walking around in Florence in the blue. Wow.
With that giallo coat. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But the coat game in Digestivo is really noticeable, especially
and
because
Mason has that red coat with the fur collar also, which I covet.
Yes.
I'm in fandom. There's big, like, handy fashion sort of moves. A lot of the pieces have been identified and they pop up every so often. Chio's coat is definitely a hard one to find because it's literally, like, just called, like, army coat, like, with buttons. And, like, that's, like, not an easy one, but a lot. Like, I have Margot's dress from her sex scene with Alana, the rapper
the black,
one.
The DM
yes, on the black. Yes, that one pops up a lot, to be honest. So you could probably definitely track that one down.
I've been hunting for it for months, and I can't get it in my size. I haven't found it. It's either too big or too small.
Yes.
So I want that. I mean, that dress. I've discussed it before.
It's a canonical Beth dress. If you were going to go look in Beth's closet right now, you would see many black and white
A-line dresses.
Oh, I love that. Yes, it's a brilliant dress and so well constructed. It just does that thing where it like puffs out and you're like, how does it even do that? But that's, you know, Margot's taste for you.
I can't believe you have it. I'm very envious. I mean, that dress I want like nobody's business.
Oh my gosh.
The time.
Well, you can message me your size after this, and I'll keep an eye on it.
Okay, please do.
Yeah,
I will.
Okay, this is a lot of fun. But we'll take a break for now, and next week we'll post the rest of our conversation with Ro, where we cover a lot of topics, including how the Hannibal community may differ from other fandoms. So we'll see you then.